With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome in, everybody, to Fantasy Pros. This is the Fantasy Football Podcast. It is me, Joey P, Joe P. Zapia, and today we're going to take a look at the rookie rankings and tiers, the short-term, the long-term, the value on the board in this rookie class, because we just can't get enough of it, and I know you can't either. So make sure, if you haven't already, you subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros, and obviously that's the best way to stay on top of everything here. Just click that little bell till it goes ding. All the podcasts are here. All of our short form videos, long form videos, you name it, we got on the YouTube channel. And today we got a great guest joining us too. Pat Corain's joining us from the Ship Chasing Podcast. You know him from his work at legendaryupside.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Pat Corain. Pat, thanks for coming on the show. We are happy to have you here today, joining myself and Mr. Andrew Erickson. I want to get your take on the Lamar Jackson re-signing real quick, if I can, because we kind of touched on it draft night when it all happened. We are going to dove into it too much. What is the ripple effect in your mind of what the re-signing of Lamar, the draft that they just came away with, the change in offensive coordinator, what does the offense of the Ravens look like in 23?
I'm excited about the Ravens. I think they hold potential to be one of those teams that being really overweight on was, you know, extremely profitable. Lamar going back, like when you think back a couple years to his MVP season, or a few years, like they were putting up points. You know, it wasn't just about that, the, you know, because we're going to get in the weeds as projections start to roll out about how many pass attempts you can project for them now. I think it's probably a little bit more than before, but how many more, et cetera, et cetera. But they were scoring points. And I think if Lamar gets back to that form, and he could with, you know, he just got paid. I think that helps. He's got weapons now. I think probably the best weapons he's ever had. I think Zay Flowers is pretty interesting. Rashad Bateman coming back. Rashad Bateman was actually very efficient last year on the routes that he did run. Mark
all
Andrews.
All 7 of them.
Yeah, all
no,
7.
Just teasing.
Yeah. No, but I think that they're, you know, a potentially explosive offense. And right now you can get Mark Andrews at a really nice value in best ball drafts. And, you know, he's obviously a pretty expensive asset in any dynasty league, whether or not it's tight end premium. But this is one of the teams that I think has some real upside to it.
Andrew, I was a guest yesterday of the CBS podcast, and they were asking me specifically who is the best fantasy receiver for the Ravens in 2023. Again, not tight end, but receiver, or not pass catcher, but receiver specifically. What would be your answer to that question?
Whichever one I can get the latest in drafts is probably the way I would do okay. It. It's definitely a cop-out answer, but it's
sure
really
is.
Hard to parse between the three guys because you have two guys that are first-round picks. Or three guys that are first round picks. Odell Beckham Jr. is obviously coming off the injury. So, you know, how good is he going to be coming off an injury as an older player? This isn't the first time he's torn his ACL either. Bateman's been hurt, but Bateman has shown to at least be an elite efficiency producer when he's been on the field, and Zay Flowers is a rookie. So I guess if I had to pick one, I'd probably pick Bateman because I've liked him a lot. And I think it's really just been the injuries that have been holding him back. He's younger than Odell Beckham Jr. So you'd assume that he would come back from injury stronger, but it would not surprise me if Zay Flowers, who is really productive at Boston College, comes out and blazes in this offense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Zay Flowers is certainly the wild card there. We're going to get into him and a lot more of these players here. Let's start, though, at the quarterback spot here. I want to talk about the different ranks and the tiers here. So, Erickson, in your opinion, at the quarterback spot from this rookie class, who is in the elite tier?
Anthony Richardson. And I particularly don't think it's even close. I think the other guys are like way down in their own separate tiers than Richardson, just based on the rushing upside that he can the rushing upside that he can bring and his landing spot. Like, his landing spot is so much better than going to the Houston Texans or the Carolina Panthers. Not even just from like what the personnel is, from a receiver standpoint, from a running back standpoint, from a coaching standpoint. I think it's all there for him in Indianapolis versus Houston and Carolina, where I have way more question marks about the supporting casts.
All right, that's fair. I mean, way is a big, that's a big spicy meatball there, Pat. What do you think about that? Is Richardson the standalone elite guy in this class for you as well?
I have him in his own tier, even in my super flex ranks. I have Bijan and Anthony Richardson as their own tier. I have Bijan ahead.
Right.
But I would say in super flex, I don't really agree that there's a big, big, big gap, because you get the, I think with Bryce Young, certainly there's risk with the size, but like the talent level and kind of just his ability to play traditional quarterback, I'm a believer in. First overall pick in the draft. I think the coaching staff is a good fit for him there as well. He could end up being kind of on the higher volume in terms of passing a couple years down the line, you know? So I think it's like one of these super flex assets where you're just very happy to have this starting quarterback who's a very good real life quarterback. I like Bryce Young's chances of giving you that. In one quarterback dynasty leagues, yeah, I mean, there's no question. It's Anthony Richardson. Bryce Young, you couldn't tack on very cheaply, but Richardson's the guy who gives you rushing upside. And I completely agree with Andrew about the landing spot. I mean, the coaching is it's going to build an offense around what Richardson does well. You know, it's going they're not going to be afraid to build the offense around his rushing ability. They're not going to be afraid to utilize him at the goal line. We just saw the rugby play with Shane Steichen and the Eagles. That's still legal. Somehow they didn't outlaw that.
I don't know how it is. I thought for sure as soon as they had the meetings, I was like, well, that's the first thing to go at the meetings this year, but it wasn't.
Yeah. And now we get 240 something pound Anthony Richardson running it instead of Hurts. I mean, it's going to be even more effective.
You should hand it off to somebody else and let Richardson push the guy. That's what I think.
Yeah, there you go.
We're really going to get something there. Oh, get Jonathan Taylor the ball and just push him. So let's get to that next year then. So in that next grouping, both of you, I know, have CJ Stroud and Bryce Young. You've got Young ahead of Stroud. You're very confident in the football acumen, as a lot of people are, as obviously the Carolina Panthers are. I am concerned with the size. Like, that is something that does concern me, because he is playing now. It's like playing Georgia every week. You know, you're playing with these much bigger, faster, stronger guys. So in your opinion, you still feel like Bryce Young is still ahead of Stroud. Why?
Well, so one thing that I like about Bryce Young is, you know, he played better under pressure than Stroud, at least in terms of the numbers that he put up in college. And He scrambled a little bit more than Stroud, which doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to be like a runner. He's like too small to really add anything as a runner at the NFL level, but he just kind of profiles as more of a playmaker. And I'm worried that Stroud is going to be more of like an executor, you know, just kind of he does what's asked of him. And he's kind of in an offense where like that's probably what they're looking for. You know, this Shanahan style offense is going to be a little bit more like get the ball out quickly. You know, I don't know that he's going to be asked to run a lot. And that's the big thing with Stroud. He didn't really run. We know he can run. He did show that. But he didn't really do it outside of that Georgia game. So this is the kind of offense where it doesn't strike me that they're going to be all that interested in utilizing him as like a true dual threat. It's going to be more about execution. I think he's going to be good enough at that he's probably going to be more of a kind of a classic pocket passer. I think Young, given the coaching pair that he's got, it could ultimately evolve into more of a pass-first offense, where I think that Shanahan-style offense is probably going to be tilted to the run, even if Stroud is doing a good job executing the offense. So as I just look ahead like a couple years, it's just easier for me to see Young becoming a high-volume passer. And both these guys have the profiles where they need to be high-volume passers to really make a difference in fantasy.
Erickson, you've got them inverse. Tell me why.
Well, I do think the size can bring it back up again. I think that does matter when it comes to Stroud versus Bryce Young. Stroud is built differently than Bryce Young. I think that makes it a better chance for him to have a longer career in the NFL. He's going to get banged up a lot less. I think that offensively speaking, look, Frank Reich, have we really seen him develop a quarterback? Like, he's worked with a lot of these older players before. I'm looking at CJ Stroud.
Does
here.
Carson
where,
Wentz count?
Kinda.
It
did when he
I
was
mean,
there
for a little while.
Yeah,
it worked in what 2016, I think.
And
it
then
was,
it fell.
Right?
And then it fell.
2017, I think. And then
2017. I'm sorry, yeah. 2017. Right.
So good call. I mean, look, he's had his hands in a couple different guys here and there, but look, what we saw last year, Bobby Slowick, who is the new offensive coordinator for the Houston Texans, formerly of the 49ers, we saw him dial up a lot of great stuff for Brock Purdy in year one, a seventh round pick. So now you're getting a souped up version of Brock Purdy in CJ Stroud, who is much better across the board, but is a super accurate passer at all levels of the field. I think that Stroud's got some untapped upside here in this offense. When you look at two, I think that at Ohio State, you know, it was a little bit easier for him there, where he's got all these all pro wide receivers running around. It's like, why do I need to do anything else? Like, just throw it to the open guy. It's like, not that hard. Where now it's going to be, hey, you're going to have to do more because your receivers are worse than they were in college at the NFL level. So I think we're going to see a little bit more of CJ Stroud making some more off script playmaking. I think he's going to surprise people, like what his final stat line actually looks like and what he looks like as an NFL passer versus a college passer, because it's not always like the same thing. You don't always get the same exact player. This is what he was in college. This is what he's going to be in the NFL. Maybe not necessarily.
Now, you both have here in the upside category, Will Levis and Hendon Hooker. You have them in that order, which kind of surprises me just a little bit. I'm not a big Will Levis guy. Apparently, other teams in the NFL weren't either. I keep looking at the Hendon Hooker landing spot, Erickson, as really good potentially, where there's zero pressure for him to play at all this year, maybe even next year. But I understand he's 25. I get it. He's a little bit older. But for a guy who just was just really good at playing quarterback and didn't do anything on an elite level, he is going into a situation here in Detroit where there's a lot of positive pieces around him and a lot of good momentum. So why Levis ahead of Hooker for you, Andrew?
Well, I think that Levis has a better chance of starting sooner. I think that that matters. You know, what's your value? Can this player get his value? Can he increase his value sooner rather than later? I think that that does matter. Levis also got much better draft capital than Hendon Hooker, which lends itself to him getting more opportunities. There's a clear window and path where Ryan Tannehill, this is the last year of his contract. Like, he's not going to be on the team next year unless he signs for a very cheap deal. But at his age, it doesn't make a lot of sense. So Levis could not even do really that much next year and still be the quarterback in 2024 for the Tennessee Titans, regardless of, you know, depending on how the things shake out with Malik Willis. So I think from a, can this guy become a starting quarterback in the NFL? Okay, I think that there's value in that. Whereas the Lions are talking about extending Jared Goff, which I do not know why they're trying to do that, but I don't know. They did a lot of things this past week that
have me
questioning what they're doing over in Detroit. But the thing with Levis too is I'm not worried about his like mobility. Like, Hendon Hooker's coming off a torn ACL, so even though he did run a little bit at the college level, he's coming off an injury. Usually we see quarterbacks when they first come off injuries, they don't run as much. Will Levis, yes, he was banged up last year, but 2 years ago when he was fully healthy in a lean cone offense, pro style offense, I mean, he was putting up like Josh Allen type numbers. Like, he was super accurate. He was running the ball a ton. And look at that Titans offense. Who's he throwing the ball to? He's not going to be throwing the ball to much. But he's going to have to run and make plays on his own. So I think if Levis steps in, I think that we could see some fantasy production from the get-go. Even if it's him just, hey, I'm just going to take it and run.
Yeah, I actually considered not including Hooker in this tier, because I kind of view Levis as like basically a tier ahead of Hendon Hooker. I think there's a chance that Ryan Tannehill isn't on the Titans this year, right? He could get traded to the Falcons. You know, they have no interest in Ryan Tannehill being their long-term quarterback. And Will Levis is going to get starts for the Titans. He probably gets some starts this year. They're not going to be good. So, you know, even if they keep Tannehill, how long is he going to be starting this year? I think this is a weird sell, but like, I think Will Levis is kind of bad, but that means he's going to have to run around. You know, the same argument about the wide receivers not being very good. I don't think he's that good, but I think he's going to have to use his size and mobility. And that's going to be sometimes fun for fantasy. And we're getting the production sooner with Hooker. I mean, the Lions are playing for now, right? And this is a team, their whole identity is like fight tooth and nail for everything, you know, biting the kneecaps and all that. This is not a team that's like shutting Goff down, you know, in week 12 and seeing what they have in a rookie quarterback and playing for next year. That's not this team's identity. And they're also probably too good for that. I think they get the defense at least a little sorted. Maybe, you know, they're like they were already a fringe playoff team. And so, yeah, the other thing with Hooker is, like, even if he was in a situation where they wanted to get a look at him, the big red flag with him is that he took a ton of sacks. His pressured sack rate was really bad. That's not going to help. You know, it's not going to be helpful that he's coming off a torn ACL for that. If that's already his weakness, his ability to evade the pass rush is going to be a major problem. I doubt he even sees the field this year.
There we go. All right. So that's the breakdown of the QBs. Let's go and talk about the running backs here that we have potentially going forward. Now, I don't even think I was going out on a limb. I've kind of come out with my statement, you know, and I don't care if people tell me I'm crazy, because they told me I was crazy last year. And I said Justin Jefferson is the 1-1 pick, and that's who I took everywhere and where I could. This year, I think Bijan Robinson is the third overall player in redraft in dynasty leagues. He's the first overall player in rookie drafts. So I am obviously very bold and very secure with Bijan Robinson. You've got him, Pat, in that elite tier. You've also got Jahmyr Gibbs, as is Andrew Erickson. So obviously two very different style players here. So tell me about your thoughts on Bijan, your 2023 expectations and beyond. And then let's touch on Gibbs too and see what he can do now that DeAndre Swift is out of the picture in Detroit.
I think the bar is going to move on what counts for bold with Bijan, and it's going to move up. So you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to rank him like
up to where I am or past me.
I think past you, maybe. If you want to be bold, if you want to be bold in September, you might have to have him 102.
I've got Jefferson, Chase, Bijan. Everybody knows that's the order right now.
It's bold now. It's bold now. I'm saying, I don't know
who said it first.
I don't know that's bold in September, because I think people are going to be super psyched.
Everybody else catches up to me. Eventually it happens, but whatever.
They'll catch up.
Let's talk about Bijan. I hope they're catching up. I hope so, because I think that's right. And I think shows like this, where we're ahead of the curve instead of being the sheep out there, like a lot of other shows are, we're like, oh, it's too risky. It's not risky. Ezekiel Elliott was RB2 his rookie season. Saquon Barkley was RB2 his rookie season. RB2 overall on a 5-win terrible team. So they're like, well, the Falcons aren't a good offense.
You're ranking him RB1, though. And those guys were RB2.
I'm ranking him RB1, and they finished as RB2. You don't finish above Saquon that year? Todd Gurley, who scored 278 touchdowns that year. Okay, so that's the context. Talk to me about Bijan and why he's so great, Pat.
He's a great prospect. He is a very well-rounded prospect. He's not as big as Saquon Barkley was coming out, but he offers a lot of the same kind of like workhorse profile, but also the ability to catch passes. He was highly elusive in college. He was a great breakaway runner. He has sufficient athleticism. He was drafted by a guy who wants to pound the rock. There's really no reason not to be excited about Bijan Robinson. I mean, I guess if we have to take him ahead of Christian McCaffrey and stuff, it gets to the point where you're like a little bit like, okay, I can't have the Falcons be absolute trash, and I can't have this be any kind of a split. But I don't think it's going to be a split.
I don't think it's a split with the eighth overall pick either. No, Pat, I really don't.
I don't either. So I was targeting Bijan at the 1-2 turn pre-draft in best ball drafts. You know, he's always been the 101 in dynasty. There was never any kind of value play there, but he's moving up into like the 107 range now. I think he's a target, and I think he's going to keep moving up. I think soon he's going to flip Kelsey in these drafts and be like the 106, but you know, Tyreek and Kupp aren't safe for long. I think he's just going to keep moving up.
Good. What about Gibbs here? Obviously, without, you know, DeAndre Swift to muck things up, we've got a situation here. What's your 2023 expectation beyond for Gibbs here in the landing spot?
So I like Gibbs a lot, but he is 199 pounds, and they did just sign David Montgomery, and they were running like a true committee last year. I mean, Justin Jackson was getting snaps. Like, they don't have any problem like splitting their running back snaps up. Gibbs profiles as a guy like where even if he's hitting this year, he's probably like a 1A to Montgomery's 1B, and that could take a while for him to do that. So I'm in this awkward position where I really like Gibbs long term, but I'm not sure I'm going to be overweight on him this year in best ball drafts and stuff. But for dynasty, I'm in. I think he offers you the potential for like a year two breakout that is massive. You know, he puts on a little weight, right? He gets his first NFL offseason. You get the stories that he's looking like, you know, the best shape of his life stories, but it's like he's like 205 now, or he's 209. Like, if he puts on 10 pounds and heads into 2024, and at that point, it's going to be clear to everyone that he's way more talented than David Montgomery. He could hit the ground running. And I don't think we're going to get like a Christian McCaffrey level year two breakout. That's obviously too much to hope for, but that he is an incredible pass catcher. The only major concern is the weight. And, you know, with the draft capital that he had, if he can take care of that and just put on a little bit of weight entering next year, I think they're going to lean on him in a much bigger way. But this year it's a little thinner for sure.
Erickson, what are your thoughts on Gibbs here since we're talking about him right now?
Well, I think that the Detroit Lions, they look at Gibbs and they're like, he's going to be our Alvin Kamara. Like, Dan Campbell spent a lot of time as assistant head coach in the New Orleans Saints when Kamara was at the top of his game. So he's seen what these committees have looked like. In best case scenario, you're looking at an offense that is putting up Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram type numbers as running backs. Like, I think that's what the Lions want to have happen here. They're like, we want Mark Ingram to be Dave Montgomery. We want Jahmyr Gibbs.
Let's be honest. They almost need to, because they don't have Jameson Williams for the first six games. Right. They have a rookie tight end. Like, they're going to need to run the football. I don't think people quite realize that the first 6 weeks of the season are going to be a little rough for them in that regard.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. And the fact that Gibbs is obviously offering a lot of value as a receiver. I mean, who's the number two receiver behind Amon-Ra St. Brown? Like, Jameson Williams has one career catch on his resume and he's suspended for six games. Marvin Jones, Josh Reynolds. Like, are these guys going to step up and actually earn targets in this offense behind Amon-Ra St. Brown? I know, like, we like Sam Laporta. Oh, he's like good after the catch, but he's still a rookie tight end. Like, we didn't
see terrible
TJ
at blocking. So it might be a little bit of a,
and it's not like Hawkinson, even when he was part of this offense last year, it's like he was lighting the world up on fire, except for that one game where he just absolutely went nuclear. We saw games where he totally disappeared. So behind St. Brown, yeah, I think they're going to have to lean on the ground game here. And I think Gibbs, man, look, when he went 12th overall, it really kind of put everybody on notice. We're like, whoa, like, nobody really saw this coming. And I think it's just, we want to embrace it here. Like, we don't get running backs drafted this high ever. So why are we trying to fight it? It's like, let's embrace the fact that this team loves this running back so much. He's going to be as efficient as DeAndre Swift was. Except the team likes him. So that's the way I look at it.
Well, Erickson already gave a big Bijan take on the other day's show. So if you haven't heard that, you can go listen back with was myself and Derek earlier this week. The solid talent here at RB. Erickson, you're a little bit more forgiving than Pat. So I want to get into this here. You've got Zach Charbonnet. You've got Kendre Miller, Devon Achane, Roschon Johnson, who is another guy that I just love. And I love the landing spot for him too. And Tajay Spears. On the other side here, Pat, you've got just Achane and Charbonnet. The more that I look at Zach Charbonnet and more I get removed from the draft, the more I'm starting to think that I think it's more Charbonnet's situation to botch. And I'm less and less enamored of Ken Walker the more I'm getting some distance from this. And it feels like Pete Carroll is actually trying to tell us something about how he feels about Ken Walker potentially, where maybe the better three down option, maybe it's the inverse. Maybe it's Charbonnet and then you get some Ken Walker in there and it's not what we perceive to be the guy ahead who's already been there necessarily being the guy in front. What do you think?
Yeah, I don't really get the reaction, you know, to say, okay, this guy who they just took in the second round is clearly going to back up this other guy who they took in the second round. Like, maybe they're going to play both of them. They took them both in the second round. And maybe. If you go watch the press conference after the draft, which I did, they said they're going to play both of them. And they said they're going to play both of them in basically all situations, that they're going to, on third down, they're going to rotate both guys. And Carroll goes on, he's like, and who knows, maybe we see a strength there with Charbonnet, that he gets more of that work. And we know that's the weakness for Kenneth Walker coming in, is that this guy doesn't catch passes, but he can still get there as an early down guy. But Penny's there, you know, I was a little skeptical. I didn't have enough of him as I should, because as soon as Penny goes down, they just give it all to Kenneth Walker. He has this incredible explosive profile on the ground, which he is extremely talented as an explosive home run hitter runner. But I think in a similar way, like, we're getting a bet with Charbonnet where it's like, if Walker to miss any time, this guy's versatile. He's big. He can catch passes. I think Pete Carroll's going to be very happy to lean on the run with Charbonnet, just as he was last year with Kenneth Walker. So this looks like a committee to me. In Dynasty, I'm like a little bit less interested in Charbonnet than I am in redraft, even, because I think the bet's going to reset every year in Dynasty for the next couple years. It's like every year it's like this kind of committee. We're not sure what's going to happen, but things could shake out through injuries where one guy is an absolute smash. But in Dynasty, Achane kind of, I can at least, like, maybe he emerges as the clear guy, like a clear guy that people are wanting to trade for, they're excited about. And so that's why I ultimately had him ahead. But I've been kind of a defender.
Well, he landed in the right spot. You know, if you're talking about like a guy that landed in the right spot with a head coach who knows what to do with him, it's Mike McDaniel. I mean, that's clearly, you know, the plus for him.
Exactly.
And if you can't trust Pete Carroll, Pat, who can you trust? I mean, at the end of the day.
I mean, he's drafting running backs and saying he's playing them. That actually does seem like something I think I can trust.
He does. Well, and I think he's got a little PTSD because it feels like, you know, ever since he moved up for Rashad Penny, it's been this, I mean, whether it was Chris Carson and Rashad Penny and the DJ Dallas, and you keep going, like, there's so many guys and nobody's been able to stay healthy. And I feel like he's like, I need more running backs. I just need more running backs because all my running backs are always hurt. And he took quality running backs, so that's a good thing. But
I'm who's the Penny the here? Like, to me, the Penny's Walker, and you know, the explosive guy, right? He likes his Carsons. Charbonnet's a Carson. He's just
a Carson. That's what I said on a show earlier this week, Pat. It was just like talking about Walker being the Penny.
He was clearly listening. He subscribes to the podcast wherever he gets his pods. Erickson. The other guys of this list, because I know, you know, you've given a lot of Charbonnet and A-Chain takes too. Kendre Miller, Roschon Johnson, Tajay Spears. Now, Spears, obviously, health-wise, there's some questions there. So is obviously looking into the long term. But let's talk about Kendre Miller and Roschon Johnson, two guys that could have a clearer path than we realize sooner than we realized.
I just really like Kendre Miller. I liked his profile a lot. He came out early. I think that the fact that he was a third-round pick and did not test at all, I think that's very telling of a running back where everybody is so analytically driven, where it's like, what's his 40 time? Like, how much does he weigh? We need to know all these things. And the Saints were like, we were comfortable enough with his tape, like what he put on film, the numbers that he put up at TCU, that they were comfortable taking him with a third round pick, which we did not see a lot of running backs go in the third round. We saw two, Kendre Miller and So I think that he, in the situation he's in with New Orleans, where you have question marks about Kamara, I think from a dynasty perspective, I think Kamara's days are numbered in Saints, whether it's because of contract, whether it's because he's going to get suspended. Like, he's just not going to be there for much longer. And then you have Jamal Williams, who we've kind of seen as this guy that, you know, he steps up most of the time when he gets opportunities, but he's mostly volume driven. He's a team player type of running back, where I think that someone could beat him out if someone is more talented. And Kendre Miller is an explosive running back, which I don't think Jamal Williams is. So I think he can stand out in this offense, especially if they don't have Alvin Kamara for spells during the year. So that's why I like Kendre Miller. And I like his size too. Like, he's the exact same size as Bijan Robinson. Like, he has bell cow size. So I think Kendre Miller for me is probably one of my favorites of this group.
Yeah. And then Roschon, obviously, is a guy that did not get, you know, nearly the publicity maybe he would have in another team because he's playing behind the best running back in college football, Bijan Robinson. But you watch his tape, it is incredibly impressive. And he's landing in an offense that, you know, they're going to run the football in Chicago. And what's ahead of him is, you know, 1 year deal, Deonta Foreman and Khalil Herbert. So I'm looking at that. And, you know, you want to talk about like who comes cheaper in drafts kind of thing, Erickson. You know, as I look, as somebody who's very enamored of taking a lot of wide receivers and going heavy in that, the Bears running back situation is when that fascinates me, because I'm looking at potentially taking some shares of maybe two of those three guys, even this year, and looking at, you know, possibly getting productivity out of them at some point.
Yeah. I think with Roschon, I think it's him and Foreman that are kind of competing for the same spot the roster versus Herbert, where I think Herbert is more of the guy that the US call. He's kind of like our speed guy. Like, he can generate big explosive plays. Cause even last year when we were just all just like, please put Khalil Herbert in the game more than David Montgomery. Oh, like, he's so much better. Khalil Herbert. They still refuse to do it. And Herbert's been banged up more than the other running backs have been, historically speaking. So I think Herbert's kind of always going to be hanging around no matter what. But I think that Foreman or Johnson could emerge as that actual lead back, where Khalil Herbert kind of just stays in his role. And if I was betting on which running back, I'd probably take Roschon as a guy that's great in pass pro, a guy that doesn't have a lot of wear on his tires. Wouldn't surprise me at all if, like, September comes around, cuts are coming out, and Foreman gets released by the Bears. It's like, oh my God, Roschon Johnson, his ADP is going to skyrocket. So
I think now
is probably the better time to get in on him versus later.
I like that.
You're 100% right.
Yeah. I think the pass pro element is one to underline there too, because, like, sometimes, you know, we talk about roles and committees and stuff with the running back position, but it's not like, you know, every single first down, you know, they put this guy on, and every single third down, they put this guy. Sometimes they just leave the guy out there who was already out there. So if you convert a third down with Roschon Johnson on the field, he's got the size and ability to play on early downs. I don't think they're immediately pulling him, you know? So I think he can kind of earn more touches by just being good at pass protection, even though they're not going to pass a ton to the running back. He's not going to generate a ton of receiving value because of the way that offense is going to work with Fields as the mobile threat. But I think he's got something he does better than the other guys, which could help him earn playing time.
And don't forget everybody too. We've got more coverage here. I know Erickson's got a bunch of great articles up here in the Dynasty Draft Kit, which is available right now on fantasypros.com/dynasty. It's free. So many great articles about, you know, who's overvalued, who's undervalued, all the rankings, all the analysis. It's all there. Again, fantasypros.com/dynasty. Check it out. There's premium articles too. So if you're already a premium member with us, you can go see all those extra ones that are on the site also that are really spectacular. But this is the best Dynasty rookie kit we've ever put together. So go check it out. I encourage you all to do that. Let's continue on here with the rest of this group of running backs here that are more in the upside tier. Erickson, you've got Chase Brown, Dwayne McBride, Zach Evans, Israel Abanaconda, Evan Hall, Tank Bigsby, and Eric Gray. Give me the one guy out of this grouping that you think can make a fantasy impact sooner than later.
So some of these guys come with the caveats like, well, if they get rid of Dalvin Cook or they get rid of Joe Mixon, then you see a path where, okay, Chase Brown, Dwayne McBride, okay, now they have upside because now they have opportunity in their respective backfields. So that's kind of like same thing with Abanaconda, where if Breece Hall is coming back solely from his torn ACL injury, okay, then does he step in? Does he leapfrog Michael Carter, Zonovan Knight, some of these other guys on the roster? So I think that that's kind of interesting from those guys. But the player I gravitate towards the most, and it's someone that I think is really polarizing, Zach Evans from Ole Miss. Now, his biggest problem at the college level, besides some of the off-field stuff, attitude, I mean, he was always really efficient. Like, I look at, when I'm evaluating rookie running backs, I look at how efficient they are on a per-play basis. And Zach Evans ranked really high for me in that regard. It's something that I've always kind of kept an eye on. Players that have done well in that category historically that were late-round picks, Ramondre Stevenson, Elijah Mitchell, those are the guys I'm kind of looking for. And Zach Evans kind of checked off some of those boxes. But the biggest thing, an issue with him in college, was he never really took over a backfield. Like, he was always like in a committee with somebody, whether it's Kendre Miller, whether it was some other running back from Ole Miss. Like, he never really fully took over a backfield. And now the situation he is with the Rams, well, it's Cam Akers and then a bunch of other guys. Like, I don't really, I'm not afraid of Ronnie Rivers or Kyren Williams versus Zach Evans from a talent standpoint. I think he's way better than those other running backs. And then it's just Cam Akers. And look, we've ridden the Cam Akers roller coaster enough times to know we don't know where this is going. Like, 1 minute Sean McVay
typically makes you sick.
1 minute Sean McVay loves this guy. He's going to give him 30 carries. And then the next, well, you know, we're going to cut Cam Akers today. So I think Zach Evans is an interesting player from the fact that I could see Sean McVay, this Rams team is losing a bunch of games. Stafford's hurt. They have Stenson Bennett out there. It's like, hey, you know, Cam Akers is banged up. We're just going to roll with Zach Evans and he's going to get 25 carries today because we have no other, you know, source of offense. So I'm going to lean on Evans as one of the guys I like late in some of these dynasty drafts.
Pat, looking at your list, you've got Kendre Miller at the top of the upside grouping. You've got Tajay Spears, Roschon Johnson, Chase Brown, then Tank Bigsby, then Abanaconda, and then Evan Hall. So of this grouping here too, I know you haven't ranked a certain way, but is there one where maybe their path starts to open itself up a little bit to you where you feel like, yeah, this guy could have a bigger fantasy impact sooner than we realize?
Well, Andrew just convinced me that I should have had Zach Evans on this list at least, but I would say Tajay Spears is a guy who jumps out to me a bit. He's a smaller back, but he's a receiving back. And you know, he's kind of like in the Michael Carter archetype, but I think he's probably a bit more explosive. Now he's got this knee issue, which is going to, you know, knock him down in drafts, but like we kind of forget about that stuff very quickly. And it's not that he was drafted in the third round, it's not like they're gonna they think he can contribute, and maybe 3 or 4 years from now he, you know, it shortens his career. But like Jay Ajayi had an amazing career before he didn't, you know what I mean? And he same exact kind of red flags. It's that he had an ACL tear, I believe, in high school that created some issues, some red flags for team. He fell all the way to the fifth round. So I just kind of feel like we kind of forget, like, remember we're supposed to be keeping in the back of our minds that Nick Chubb had a major knee injury before he came in. Does anyone? No one cares.
Right.
No one cares.
Yeah.
It's gone now. That's over. And until there's some sort of injury report issue, and then we'll all freak out. Oh God, everyone forgot he had a knee thing that we've completely wiped from our minds. So I think like with the same kind of depth chart stuff, Derrick Henry's really getting up there. This is a team that's pretty clearly resetting. They could be trading Ryan Tannehill. They could get rid of Derrick Henry. They've already talked about doing that. So, you know, does Spears walk into a ton of opportunity right away? I think it's at least possible. And I think it's at least possible that next year it's looking like he might have a ton of opportunity, which is a trade window for you. So he's just, you know, that depth chart uncertainty in a, with a player who I think is probably a little underrated talent-wise right now because of the injury concerns.
We've got a lot more going on here for you at Fantasy Pros, and we want you to join us for the Fantasy Pros Championship, FFPC's Fantasy Pros Championship, so you can get a chance to win $6 million in total prizes, including a $1 million grand prize, and it's free Fantasy Pros and free Betting Pro subscriptions also up for grabs as well. So you can sign up today at fantasypros.com/championship and use that promo code FantasyPros when you do, and you'll save $25 off your entry, and if you enter before June 1st, which is before you know it, right around the corner, and you draft before June 15th, you get an extra $35 early bird credit for you. Each league has 12 teams. You have 12 regular season weeks. You have waivers. You have lineup decisions. No trades. But the top two seeds from each league move on to the championship rounds to compete for that $1 million prize. We want that to be you. So don't miss out. Visit fantasypros.com/championship and use that promo code FantasyPros for $25 off your first entry. Good luck. We're all counting on you. Let's continue on here to the wide receivers. Now, Jaxon Smith-Njigba is number one for both of you guys in that elite tier, along with Jordan Addison. Both of you have two. Then you've got Pat Quentin Johnson at three. Erickson's got Zay Flowers at three, and then Quentin Johnson at four. And now Zay Flowers, obviously not on your elite quote-unquote list. We'll get to that in a second as to why. I'm fascinated here with the order you guys both basically have the same two here, yet Quentin Johnson's in a situation where, Pat, it feels like whenever the next Mike Williams injury happens, which could be during this podcast for all we know, there's going to be opportunity for Quentin Johnson with an elite quarterback, and Keenan Allen is not getting any younger. So why is Johnson the three as opposed to Addison, you know, who is playing along with Justin Jefferson, who's the alpha, getting so much of that target share, and then Jaxon Smith-Njigba, who's buried here as the third guy potentially for this year and next? Why is Quentin Johnson three of these guys, one and two above him?
To me, it just comes down to my confidence in their talent level. And I just feel like Jaxon Smith-Njigba is the clear best prospect in my mind still. And I don't know how buried he is from a long-term perspective. You know, like Lockett's getting up there in age. Jaxon Smith-Njigba, I think, is going to fit really well with what Geno Smith does. Geno Smith is very accurate. You know, he doesn't mind getting the ball out very quickly. That's going to mesh super well with Jaxon Smith-Njigba. I think, you know, heading into next year, we could be projecting him for the most targets on the Seahawks. So I'm not concerned about the situation with Jaxon Smith-Njigba. Jordan Addison is definitely more of an issue because he's never going to be the number one in Minnesota, obviously. But he projected pre-draft for me like a perfect 1B type, like the kind of guy like a Devontae Smith type of ceiling outcome where we're okay. And I mean, this is the perfect landing spot for that, you know, and we could be taking him in the fifth round of drafts next year. After a strong rookie season, he could be the type of guy 2 years from now we're drafting like Devontae Smith in the second or the third round. I mean,
and Devontae Smith finished as a wide receiver one last year.
Exactly.
Points.
So exactly.
It's a heck of a point.
But I do think Johnson has a huge ceiling. And I think that his landing spot was excellent, not just because of Herbert, but because I was worried that someone was going to cast him like Mike Williams. They were going to say, you're a big wide receiver. Go win at the catch point. But he didn't do that very well. What he did do very well was win after the catch. His yak was awesome. He was a great downfield yak producer. And I think if they're using Mike Williams like Mike Williams, which I think they will, then, you know, Quentin Johnston can at least be more, I think maybe move him around the formation a little bit more, you know, try to get the ball in his hands and have him create after the catch, which I think is his biggest strength. And I think Herbert is a good fit for that type of wide receiver. So I don't want to discount Quentin Johnston. I think, you know, that's why I had him ahead of Zay Flowers and in this tier as one of the top.
Now, Andrew, you have Zay Flowers in the elite tier and Pat does not. So let's talk about the reasons why, because I agree with you. I actually would have had him in my elite tier as well, because I love everything about the guy. I love the way he plays football, the intangibles that he's got, the guy himself, very high character, work ethic kind of thing, all the things you're looking for to make it at the next level. So why is Zay Flowers in there for you in this elite grouping?
Well, he was a first round pick. Like, I think that matters significantly when you're just looking at rookie hit rates and who can finish as a top 24 receiver. Like when you go from round one to round two, just the numbers are staggering and how far it drops off. So I think that considering where they all went, like back to back to back to back, it's like the NFL viewed them all pretty closely together in terms of, okay, where are we looking at these players from a long-term perspective? I think with Flowers, for me, you can make some of the same arguments with Quentin Johnson, where it's like, well, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen are getting up in there in age. They get hurt all the time. Okay, well, Odell Beckham is just coming off torn ACL. Like Rashad Bateman's coming off two injury plagued seasons. So how long is it going to take for Zay Flowers to really step up and become part of this offense? Lamar Jackson, I think he's an elite passer. I know that some of the NFL don't. I couldn't disagree more with that. I think Lamar Jackson is going to put on a revenge tour this season, honestly, and just light everything ablaze because of all the criticism he's kind of gotten over this past during his contract negotiation period. So those are some of the reasons why I still like Zay Flowers in this elite tier. I've gone back and forth with him and Quentin Johnston. I think that Flowers for me maybe is a bit of a safer projection. I think that he's played more, whereas Quentin Johnston has a little bit more boom or bust to his game. And I think that that's probably the reason why I just have Zay Flowers just one spot ahead.
Now in this next tier in the solid talent, Erickson, you've got Marvin Mims, Rashee Rice, Jaden Reed, Jalen Hyatt, Cedric Tillman, another player who I like a lot long-term, Josh Downs and Tank Dell. Rashee Rice is the guy I want to get into with you here, because this is a situation where we keep looking for who is going to emerge from this clump of wide receivers in Kansas City, because whoever does gets Patrick Mahomes throwing the football 100 plus times. They have Kadarius Toney, they have Sky Moore. Obviously, Kelsey is going to be Kelsey. They have MVS on the outside, but Rashee Rice is another guy that plays on the outside. So does Rashee Rice have an opportunity here to really emerge in by the end of 2023 as somebody that Patrick Mahomes is looking for and targeting, and maybe the next guy in this offense that we want to have in fantasy?
He's really productive at SMU. He broke all of Emmanuel Sanders' records. So from a production standpoint, like the guy can deliver. He's got a pretty good college profile. You know, he's a pretty good athlete. So he kind of like checks off a decent amount of boxes of a player that, okay, like this guy in a great situation could probably be a good wide receiver at the NFL level. I guess that's kind of where I have it with Rice, where I'm not so totally sold on all. He's just this like amazing prospect. Like he's going to be an all-pro wide receiver. I don't necessarily see that with Rashee Rice, but I understand when you're attached to Patrick Mahomes, it's like it's just not a bad bet to keep making.
Oh, yeah, you could be a good receiver. You have a great quarterback. That helps a lot.
Exactly. So I do think that Rice has some obviously upside with in an offense attached to Patrick Mahomes, where there are question marks. I mean, I'm not really huge on Kadarius Toney just because the way the guy plays is asking for injuries, the way that he just tries to move his legs and knees every time he gets the ball. I still like Sky Moore a little bit. So Rice, I think he kind of just falls into the Chiefs wide receiver room. And it's like, well, I mean, if you're better than Justin Ross, you'll be out there. But if he's not, I'm not necessarily wouldn't be surprised if we see something else from this receiving room, because again, as long as Patrick Mahomes has been the quarterback in the Kansas City Chiefs, it's really been Tyreek Hill and not really anybody else. Despite all the claims that Mahomes gets, it's like, it's really, he hasn't really increased the usability of other receivers not named Tyreek Hill. Most of it's because of Travis Kelce having a major presence in that passing game. But for the most part, like chasing Kansas City wide receivers hasn't really worked out. So with Rice, I will definitely be more price sensitive to him, where it's like, if he's getting steamed up extremely close to the start of the year, I'll be like, you know what? Rookie wide receiver in the second round, like I can take somebody else and I'll just take a cheap wide receiver.
Now, Pat, you've got Zay Flowers at the top of this grouping, then Marvin Mims and Jonathan Mingo. Mingo's getting a lot of hype lately in a lot of different spots. Do you buy into that same hype where Mingo could be a guy that becomes the favorite of Bryce Young sooner than later?
To an extent. But it's one of these things where I want to be out in front, right? We want people to catch up to us to the Bijan point, right? Like Mingo is going to move up in these best ball drafts, I think. And, you know, I think he's someone that in your dynasty draft, you know, if you already have him or you're taking him this week, he's probably going to be worth more even later this offseason, because they just took this guy early in the second round. There's really no target competition. Like DJ Shark's his biggest target competition, I guess, Adam Thielen, but I think Adam Thielen's done. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's fallen off a lot. So Mingo sets up as a big bodied target earner who can play outside. He's pretty good after the catch. He's extremely athletic. I mean, he's absolutely elite as an athlete. His production profile is not great. It's not really even good. 4-year player. So that's a concern. But as we look at like just the sheer like amount of targets that are available and the idea of can he basically operate like a Michael Pittman in this Frank Reich offense. Yeah, I think he's got a decent chance of being, you know, that kind of, you know, big bodied outside guy. And I think the market is going to come around to that idea. So I just think, like, right now I like him, you know, as like a mid second super flex type of pick. It feels like a lot of upside to me. I mean, yes, he doesn't have the production profile that I like, but if I'm going to make exceptions, I want to make exceptions on guys who have ability to earn targets right away and who have elite athleticism. And he is both.
All right. Well, when we're looking at upside guys here, Jalin Hyatt's at the top of your list. He kind of fits the bill on both of them. Then you have Rashi Rice, Cedric Tillman, Jaden Reed, and Josh Downs. Jalin Hyatt, certainly a guy that checks a lot of the boxes you just talked about. Do you think that the landing spot for the Giants helps him?
I think the landing spot for the Giants could help him long term. I do think we need to maybe like reset on Jalin Hyatt and Josh Downs because they were not valued by the NFL like we thought they were. They were like, right. Hyatt was supposed to be in the first round when we were starting all this stuff. It's just not who the NFL thought he was. And Josh Downs, you know, supposed to be early second, not at all. So I think like you want to be patient with Hyatt. I think there's a long-term situation where he can emerge as like, you know, their top outside wide receiver for sure. But he played mostly in the slot in college. I think he's going to have to transition. Like he was already going to be the type of guy that we were projecting is like, you know, a bit of a project. And I guess maybe they could play him more in the slot in kind of the four wide receiver set type of approach under Daboll. But they also have every slot receiver known to man on that roster right now. Right. They've got like Crowder and Paris Campbell. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah, in addition to Wandale Robinson and stuff. So like, I don't know how many slot snaps are really available to him. I think he's going to have to earn routes on the outside. That could take a little while. So I think be patient, which is why I had him down in this upside tier rather than the solid talent tier.
Erickson, in the upside tier for you, you've got Jonathan Mingo, then Kayshon Boutte and Tyler Scott. So anybody jump out to you in this tier?
It's Kayshon Boutte. Kayshon Booty. That, I mean, look, the Patriots cannot draft wide receivers in the top 3, 4, 5 rounds to save anyone's life. Okay. I've been through all of the Aaron Dobsons and Malcolm Mitchells and all these guys that have all been horrible.
Nikhil Harry.
Soon to be the Tyquan Thorntons, like all these guys. Yeah. And just to see the Steelers draft, everyone that's better, Antonio Brown, last year, George Pickens, like we've all seen it where.
But you're not bitter.
No, yeah. I'm not bitter at all. Nikhil Harry, and then they draft, and then they sign Jacoby Myers to an undrafted free agent, and he ends up getting the big contract from the Las Vegas Raiders. So, regardless, with Kayshon Booty, the thing with him is he broke out as 18-year-old at LSU. Like, we've seen all of these wide receivers come out from LSU, the Justin Jeffersons, the Jamar Chases, and, you know, Booty was viewed as one of the top prospects in this entire class at wide receiver at one point. The last game he played, he absolutely destroyed Georgia's defense. Yeah, you know, the defense that gets everyone drafted to the NFL and all like half their team is on the Eagles now. Yeah, Kayshon Booty, a 6th-round pick, destroyed that defense in his last game at LSU. So the way I see it is, look, the Patriots receiving core is not that great. They have Juju Smith-Schuster there. Okay, they signed him. Devontae Parker, Kendrick Bourne. They're trying to find ways to not put him on the field. They have a bunch of tight ends. Like, this offense needs juice. That was the biggest thing, their biggest issue last year. They just didn't have any juice. So I think that they're willing to open it up. They have not been afraid to throw guys without draft capital into the starting lineup. And I think Booty's going to get an opportunity here in this offense. And we've seen it when he's had chances to produce and been healthy. Because that was the biggest thing. In 2021, he got hurt with an ankle injury. And then last year, it was off the field issues. The offense wasn't that great. What was going on with the program? Just a lot of things that really weren't football related. I think that kind of distracted Booty from becoming the guy we thought he would be. And he tested so horribly. Like, oh my God, I don't know what his agent was telling him to do. Is like, have you ever practiced a vertical jump in your entire life? Go out there. Like, you'll do great. Like,
this is small, but he stood on his combine numbers at his pro day. Like, yeah. that's a red flag to me on it in its own right. He was like, they're like, how about the doing better than the 29-inch vertical? You want to do that? And he's like, no, that's good. I'm good. I'm happy with that number.
Like, so I don't know what he was doing. I don't know who was telling him to do what in that situation, but it did not work out for him. Where when you look at the JSN barely played at all last year, and his draft stock did not get touched whatsoever. Whereas Kayshon Booty, he played bad last year. He didn't test great, and his draft stock plummeted as a result. But from a talent perspective, like Kayshon Booty has extremely talented profile.
Oh, sure. He was a very highly regarded prospect.
So that's why I love his upside. I think that the Patriots are more willing to take a shot on a player like this from an opportunity standpoint than most are willing to admit. And I think that so many people have been burned by Patriots drafting wide receivers. It's like, yes, when they draft guys highly, they're missing left and right every single time. When they take guys late, Julian Edelman, Jacoby Myers, like some of those types of players, I think Booty can make some noise.
Let's hit these tight ends here. Obviously, Dalton Kincaid at the very top. Erickson, he's your only elite tight end. You've got Kincaid, Pat. You've also got Mayer and Laporta. So let's talk about that. Why are the other two still in this elite tier for you?
Yeah, I mean, the Dalton Kincaid landing spot is very exciting. He gets the first round draft capital. But I like the profiles of Michael Mayer and Sam Laporta with high second round draft capital as well. And, with tight end, we are trying to find like a very rare profile. You know, we're like, if you hit on a David Njoku, okay, cool. Yeah. Who cares? It's like, that's a hit. That was a good outcome.
I'm still waiting for him to hit, Pat, actually.
Yeah.
But he's got trade value. And at some point, he's definitely going to produce. It'll happen, eventually. Maybe you're seven. So, but like, you've got to, it's in some ways, I want to kind of cast a wider net at tight end. Okay. And, Kincaid definitely has an interesting profile. He is more of a seam stretcher. He's going to be kind of the big slot for Josh Allen, which is pretty exciting. But Dawson Knox is not going anywhere. Like, he literally can't be cut, I think, until like 2025. They just like re-signed him. So he's still going to be playing plenty of snaps, I think. And he's someone that they trust. He's historically played like a really high snap rate. The Bills will play some 12 personnel, but everyone operates out of 11 personnel as their base. They're not going to be like the Chiefs led the league in 12 personnel last year. They ran it on 29% of their pass plays. So like, how much is Dalton Kincaid even playing? Again, this isn't to like knock Kincaid necessarily, but I don't see a huge gap between him and Mayer and Laporta. And I think all three of the guys have really interesting profiles. They're all pass catchers. Mayer was the most productive of them in college. Laporta is really interesting after the catch. Kincaid is a field stretcher with Josh Allen. So I think all these profiles are pretty nice. I have Kincaid ranked first with the draft capital and the landing spot, but I don't see a huge gap between him and the other two.
Yeah, Tom Strachan actually has a piece up at Fantasy Pros about the FFPC, the players to target the championship we were just talking about. And he's got Michael Mayer as one of them, too. He's gone up, though, from 151st to 135th overall just in 2 weeks. So some people tend to agree. Erickson, continuing on here, we know about the greatness of Kincaid. Your solid tier is Mayer and Laporta. You've got nobody in the solid tier here, Pat. So it's just a bunch of the upside guys, which include for you, Erickson, Tucker Kraft, Luke Musgrave, Luke Schoonmaker, and Elijah Higgins. And then Pat's got Luke Musgrave, Tucker Kraft, and Luke Schoonmaker as well. So out of these guys that are left in this grouping that we haven't talked about in the upside group, Erickson, who's the dart throw that you think is worth throwing a dart at?
I think in the long term, I probably throw a dart throw on one of the Green Bay Packers tight ends because they have a chance.
You got to pick one.
So I like Tucker Kraft more. Like I like Tucker Kraft more pre-draft. I thought that he had a more complete profile than Luke Musgrave, who it was, hey, if you just take his 2-game sample and then like put it over an entire season, like this guy is lights out. So it's like, okay, well, can we really do that? So I get why they took Musgrave first, and I get why, but they also took Kraft like right after. So it's not like they were so confident in Musgrave, like, oh, we don't need to get another tight end. Like, they drafted two of them. So I think that in itself, the question marks of who's going to be the starting tight end, we don't know. They're going to have to compete and see who's better. And I just think that Kraft was a better prospect. So that's why I would push my chips in. And while others gravitate towards the draft capital, second versus third, I don't think it's really a big deal. So it wouldn't surprise me if Kraft is able to kind of pull that. I just want to mention too, with Elijah Higgins, look, he was a wide receiver at Stanford. He's converting to tight end for the Miami Dolphins. Look, we all pegged Miami Dolphins as this like prime landing spot for a tight end. And no one is talking about Elijah Higgins, where he was drafted in the fifth round, not great draft capital. He's obviously converting from receiver, but when you look at his athletic profile, I mean, he's closely comparable to Sam Laporta. Like if Sam Laporta had gone to the Miami Dolphins, we'd all be like, oh baby, Sammy ball game, let's go. But no one's talking about Higgins because he's a convert. Now, I think that means it's probably going to take some time for him to get on the field and to learn the position. But Durham Smythe is the current starting tight end for the Miami Dolphins. Like, he's not used as a receiver. So if they need a receiving tight end, a receiving threat, that's a big-bodied guy, Elijah, I mean, Tyreek Hill's not big. Jalen Waddle's not big. Like, Elijah Higgins could be a red zone threat for the Miami Dolphins, who, for the most part, we are excited about as an offense. So I think Higgins, who's basically dirt cheap, like, yeah, I think he's still a wide receiver in a lot of different formats. I think it's going to get changed to tight end. I think that he's interesting for those reasons.
A great deep dive on the rookies, the tiers, the ranks, all here. And if you need more of it, make sure you go over to Fantasy Pros. Go check out the Dynasty Draft Kit. Again, fantasypros.com/dynasty. It's there for you. It's free. Go check it out today. Subscribe to our YouTube channel too. Click that little bell till it goes ding for notifications over at Fantasy Pros. And again, go follow our guest here, Pat Corain, over on Twitter at Pat Corain. And while you're at it, you might as well sign up for the big championship and try to win $1 million playing fantasy football. That sounds pretty good to me. FantasyPros.com/championship. The FFPC's Fantasy Pros Championship is here. And use that promo code Fantasy Pros to get $25 off your entry. We want you to win. We're rooting for you. Great stuff, gentlemen. As always, that'll do it for us. But the story of the game goes on. For Pat and Andrew, I'm Joey P. We'll see you next time, kids.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.